Welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. This week, Jake and I are joined by a very special guest, Tim Ryder. Tim is the lead writer and founder of The Apple and also hosts the Simply Amazing Mets podcast. And he is a fantastic Twitter follow as well. And we are so excited to have him on the podcast this week to talk all things Mets, both, you know, current Mets, all sorts of things going on with the season. It's an off day today, so naturally we want to kind of discuss all the different things that have been happening. So we're very excited to have someone who hosts their own podcast on with us as well to talk through all of that. So Tim, thank you so much for joining us on Cohen's Corner this week.
Elizabeth, Jake, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, awesome. So something we like to do with all of our guests, kind of regardless of what we're mainly talking about, is to kind of go back to the beginning of their baseball and Mets fandom. So I want to start out by asking you kind of how you first became either a baseball fan and then a Mets fan specifically, because I know everyone has kind of a different Mets origin story, so to speak.
My dad and my grandfather were very, very big Mets fans, and they got us, me and my brother, hooked very early. He was in insurance, so his company always had tickets, so we were at a lot of games. And just kind of grew from there. I guess one of the first games I remember was going to Tom Seaver's jersey retirement night, which was 1989, I believe. I was just 6 or 7 years old. Just the energy there. I think it was like the first time I saw my father cry. It was awesome. And hooked from there.
Well, I can't, I've only been in the presence of Tom Seaver once, which was at the opening day of Citi Field in 2009. So I have to say, I definitely felt the reverence in the crowd. So I'm sure it was kind of a similar outpouring of joy and appreciation for Tom Seaver on his jersey retirement day. I'm sure that was a wonderful day for everyone.
It's great. Oh, it was just awesome.
So Tim, let me ask you, who was your favorite player growing up?
It's tough. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember, but like 1992, the Mets went out and spent a bunch of money. I was so excited that they signed Eddie Murray. He's a first baseman, a Hall of Famer. And, like so many Mets players who came here over the years, just he played well, but the team just didn't pan out. I was a big fan of him. I kind of liked Jeff Kent before he left. I thought that he had a lot to him. I guess I was too young to kind of grasp the fact that he was a little abrasive at times. I just liked the way that he played baseball. But I guess going back all the way, it was Hernandez and Carter and Strawberry. You know, I was a little kid and just probably too young to grasp the big personality of that team. But I knew something special was happening. I remember that I want to say that Carter and Hernandez were released within days of each other. And I remember vividly, like, on my kitchen floor crying. So, yeah, I would put it back on those guys.
Even though you were obviously young at the time, I feel like that team and like just that time of Mets history just had so much personality. And I think we're kind of seeing that, you know, I don't want to equate these current Mets to the Mets of the 80s, but I feel like after a lot of years, especially in, like, you know, early 2010s of just – it's kind of a doldrum of Mets years overall. I feel like there's just such an explosion of personality on this current Mets team that it's hard for me. You know, I obviously, everyone knows, I adore Jacob deGrom, but it's really hard for me to like pick like favorite Mets players because there's just so many to like, and they all just like are so much fun. And that actually leads to something else I wanted to talk about, which, you know, obviously the Mets over the last, basically since early May, have been relying heavily on what we've kind of dubbed the replace Mets, who are coming from here, there, and everywhere, from AAA, from other teams DFAing them, trading, what have you. And there's been so many new guys who have like come to the team, and you've written about a lot of them in your various editions of The Apple that you send out to subscribers every day, which, by the way, I love reading your recaps of Mets games. I think you provide such wonderful coverage, so thank you. Who are some of your favorite like replace Mets or just new people that you just would not have expected to be playing this big of a role when the season started that we've all kind of grown to know and love for the most part?
You know, I think Kevin Pillar, and this is even before the, it's really a shame that his injury turned into some sort of like rallying cry, but that's just kind of how it worked out. And it probably worked out for the best for the team. It was almost like a galvanizing moment, but, Kevin Pillar, just the vibe that he brings, the respect that he commands in the clubhouse, it's it's evident even from the outside looking in. I think Jonathan VR has been a terrific addition. I don't think anyone was really expecting a whole bunch out of him, and the role that he's been put into and how he's responded to it is just very impressive. You can go in pretty much any direction on the positional roster and point to someone who's either outperformed what we expected or is just kicked it into another gear altogether. I mean, you know, it's special. I think it all kind of comes back to what Louis Rojas is doing. He's keeping his guys fired up. He's keeping his guys motivated. And, you know, the other half of being a manager outside of putting the lineup together and making in-game decisions is just that. It's kind of keeping the troops upbeat. And he's done a terrific job of that. And I think the veteran leadership, including some of the replace Mets, have a big part to do with it.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right with everything you said, especially the part with VR and Rojas. I mean, VR has been such a spark plug, I feel like, for them at the top of the lineup, something they really weren't expecting when season started. You expect the guys like Pilar and VR to contribute, but more so a few days a week off the bench when you needed that veteran leader or whatever they could provide. But, I mean, the spark VR has given at the top of the lineup has been great with the absence of Nimmo, and you really needed a good leadoff hitter. And, I mean, even a couple weeks ago, I know a lot of people were saying, oh, well, his stats aren't there, but – even now, I mean, his stats are going up. I think he's hitting above 250 now, or hitting around 250. His average has jumped a lot. And like you said, yeah, Rojas just seems like he's that even keel guy, and he comes to the park with the kind of the same mentality every day. And he's just a really great guy to be leading the Mets of 2021. And I think he's got to be up there for manager of the year so far up to this point of the season.
Without a doubt. And I just pulled up VR's numbers. Over his last 15 games, he's at 283, 367, 415. Like,
yeah, can't complain. I would have never pegged that,
ever. And that's just, it's so cool. It kind of speaks to the next man mentality.
Especially since hitting's like kind of down all across the league this year too. You know, I think, I'm not sure what the league average is, but it's like 230. So, I mean, if a guy's hitting 250, relatively speaking, that's not really bad. I mean, you know, you wouldn't normally kind of think of a great season to someone like hitting 250, for example. But if you think about in the context of, you know, all of everything that's going on with like pitching, I know there's been a lot of talk with all like foreign substance situation, but I mean the fact is like hitting is kind of down everywhere, so you have to kind of judge people's performances based on the balls that they're hitting and the league that they're currently in. And in that context, and even outside of that context, VR has certainly outperformed expectations. And you know, even it's funny because like, you know, VR and Pilar, they've definitely done a great job filling in, but at least like they were on the team when the year started. I mean, there's guys who were not on the roster like 2 weeks ago that have been tremendous. I mean, look at Billy McKinney. He has been like a revelation at the plate, like since he got to the Mets. I forget who they traded for him. I think like a 17-year-old pitcher, someone I had never heard of, for Billy McKinney.
International signing from last year. I couldn't even tell you.
Someone who people will claim to like, that's going to be like the next coming of Seaver that they had never heard of before he was actually traded. But yeah, no, I mean, he's been fantastic. Like he's made some great plays. I've been so, so impressed with Billy McKinney, and not just because he hit two home runs off of the Orioles, which is great. And so did Pilar. But I mean, I feel like he's just been very disciplined at the plate, has shown a lot of power. He's like four home runs with the Mets already. I mean, he's practically like halfway to the team lead with Pete Alonso, I think, is leading with 10 right now. And Billy McKinney, I think, has four with the Mets already. So another, also Mason Williams, I've been really impressed with too. He's played a good center field and he's not looked overmatched at the plate at all. I feel like he's taken very good at bats as well and has flown maybe a little bit more under the radar. But yeah, I've been very impressed with those two who kind of led the way in the Mets 14-1 route of the Orioles the other day, they each homered. So yeah, those two, at least recently for me, stuck out. And it's funny, like even kind of folk heroes of a month ago, like that's how crazy the season has been. The folk heroes of like 3 weeks ago are like not even here anymore. You know, Cameron Maven got that big like roller down the third base line. It's his only hit. He's like not even on the team right now. Patrick Mazika, his two walk-off fielder's choices, like he's back in Triple-A. So it's crazy kind of how like the revolving doors just with the injuries have been very kind of rapid, but everyone who's come in has somehow created like this full hero status for themselves, or at least just made an impact. Even, you know, Brendan Drury has had some clutch hits here and there. He hasn't been amazing every time he started, but he had a really great double play behind Stroman. He's had a couple of pinch hit home runs. I mean, I feel like everyone has had some highlights, and you don't always get that from replacement level players, maybe like in a whole season that they're on the roster.
Oh, and they've been able to squeeze a season's worth of excitement into 2 months. I can only imagine what's down the line.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And I feel like in years past with certain Mets teams, they faced plenty of adversity early in the season, whether that was injuries or just incapabilities of their manager or whatever the case may be. But this team has faced so much adversity. And with the new ownership, I can't help but think there's like a different kind of feel around the team. Like, obviously, it could just be a coincidence, whatever. But it's not really that thing where everyone's saying the same old Mets, you know, like it's kind of they're fighting back, and anything that they're that's thrown their way, they're able to get up and punch back. And it's been really impressive that some of these guys that, like you said, we could never even imagine that they would have been either called up from AAA this season or brought in from elsewhere. But it seems like everybody that's come in has done their job and kept this team more than just afloat. I mean, we're in first place. We're doing great. So it's been really impressive to see what these young guys have been able to do.
Oh, and it's across the board. I mean, look at the starting rotation. I mean, Taiwan Walker was brought in. He was brought in to be a rotational piece, but, you know, he's turned into so much more since then. I think he came into Thursday with like the sixth best ERA in baseball. Just everybody's yeah. You almost have to chalk it up to the Mets front office for going out and finding the guys that would fit into this system, even though they probably didn't know what this system would truly entail. But just players, guys who can come in and play. And yeah, no one could have predicted they'd have needed everybody, but boy, they've needed everybody and then some. And yeah, like you were saying, just the ability to continue moving forward is, especially through this type of adversity, is it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously also, you know, with that said, the Mets still, even though they've gotten some guys back from the injured list, they still have many important players that are still out probably for the foreseeable future. So Tim, I'm kind of wondering, you know, like half the Mets opening day lineup is still on the IL, 2/5 of who they thought might be in the rotation at some point is still out. Like, who do you think is the most important injured player for the Mets to get back? Like, who do you think, not with their actual injury timeline notwithstanding, would be kind of the most impactful for the Mets to get back first?
I think Brandon Nimmo, just because he's kind of the motor that keeps this offense moving. He gets on base at such a rapid pace and a great clip that, you know, if he's doing what he's doing and the regular lineup that's supposed to be behind him is behind him and they're all hitting, great things are going to happen. And even with like a, I guess you can call it a B lineup as they're putting out there now, with Nimmo back up at the top, the whole dynamic of 1-8 changes, and it really it gives the offense that much more potential to go out and put up 4 runs a night as opposed to 2.5 when they were kind of finding their way with all the injuries.
Yeah, you're right. And just think about that. If Nimmo's able to come back, you can then shift VR down the lineup. There's so much more flexibility, I feel like, that gives your lineup, not only obviously offensively, but I mean defensively as well. You can shift around your outfielders and guys like, although Mason Williams has done a great job and he's looked very comfortable in center field, it'll be nice to kind of, if you have to plug him in other spots, you know, like to do different things. But yeah, I think Nimmo would be great for them. I also think that if it ever happens, I mean, this is almost starting to feel like a Jed Lowry situation, but
don't speak it into existence.
I know, but when Carlos Carrasco comes back, I feel like that's going to be a great shot in the arm for them as well. I mean, he's such a proven veteran and just such a great leader, especially with everything he's been through off the field. I just think he's going to be a great shot in the arm for this team as well when he does come back.
We're kind of hoping for that for Syndergaard, and then with the setback, now you're just hoping that he's healthy again. But yeah, Carrasco, I mean, if he comes back and, you know, and this is just a shot in the dark. Let's say if he comes back in August and he's fully ramped up and back to being Cookie Carrasco by September, and the Mets are, knock on wood, heading into the playoffs next month, yeah, that's huge. That's a big, big step forward, and you don't have to worry about a Peterson putting up a stinker towards the end of the season if you really need a win, or, you know, in the playoffs, God forbid. But, you know, it's – yeah. Again, guys coming back, we've heard it so many times in the past about, oh, it's like making a trade.
It's making a trade. Yeah. And like every year, usually we roll our eyes at that. But
oh, but you know, before it was, you know, it was an excuse like, oh, well, we're getting this one guy back, so it's going to be all better.
Yeah.
Oh, this time we're getting like 5 guys back, so it's actually going to be a lot better. So we shall see how they approach it.
Right. Yeah, it's like the classic.
You know, if you're not going to get these, even like if something happens and you were to not get these guys back, with the owner and the people in charge that you have now, you know they're going to go out and get somebody. They're not just going to sit back and be like, all right, well, hopefully the guys we have are good enough. They're going to go out and do something about it. So I don't think it's something that Mets fans might have feared in the past. Like, oh, shoot, if these guys don't come back, we're really screwed. Like, I don't feel that way anymore because I just think that, you know, if they're going to do something about it if these guys can't come back in time.
I mean, I even saw that with, like, and, you know, who knew that Billy McKinney was going to be that good? But when they made the trade for him and you kind of just saw, okay, they're at least – the Cameron Maben had, like, 30 at-bats, got one hit. Let's, like, try someone else. And I feel like they – that just showed to me, okay, we're not just going to, like, stick with Cameron Maben for the next, like, 3 months. That just – the ability to – I guess the willingness just to make those different moves and kind of capitalize on players that are available – in kind of short order, I think has just shown that sense of urgency that we've often not seen. And even just a sense of urgency, I mean, think about it. The Mets fired their hitting coaches at the beginning of May. And ever since then, I know there's been like a lot of factors that have played into the Mets offense since then and just how they've been doing. But, you know, you have to think like just that decision to kind of evaluate the Mets hitting after a month and determine a change was needed. And, you know, so far it seems to have been working well because I just think they've just been taking – they've had much more competitive games for the most part offensively since they made that hitting coach change. And so just the willingness to not sit around and just pray that things will get better I think is definitely something we're, like, seeing from this front office. Actually, Tim, that reminds me because you mentioned David Peterson, and I'm just kind of wondering how you kind of evaluate how he's been struggling recently. I know he's – in the last couple of outings, he's really had a tough time just kind of putting guys away and – just really getting out of tough situations. So how do you kind of think, I guess, like, what do you kind of think the Mets should do about, I know about David Peterson, and with the caveat that he's probably staying in the rotation for at least the short, very short term, but I'm just kind of wondering what you think about the fact that how he's been struggling and like what you think he, or I guess what his near term future with the Mets should be.
Well, I guess in the beginning of spring training, I was a little hesitant. Again, outside looking in to tab Peterson as a rotational guy, coming into 2020, I think he made 20 starts at Double A, and that was the extent of his professional career. Well, that was the highest he'd been. They brought him up and he performed very well last season, but in the other hand, you have to kind of keep in mind that these are professional hitters, and without the experience that Peterson would have gained through, whether it's more starts at AAA, whether it's, you know, what he's going through now, he kind of needs the ability to go tit for tat with hitters as far as making adjustments, because they're making adjustments to him in real time. And maybe at this moment in time, he just doesn't have that capability. I do think he has the stuff and the makeup to be successful. I think he's showed that. He's had some really bad outings this year, but he's also had 5 quality starts, and a couple of those starts were very, very high quality starts. I really think it's a matter of time of him just getting the experience and getting comfortable and confident facing major league hitters. And I really don't think the confidence is much of an issue with him. I really don't. I think location has been an issue. I think I put up a tweet, I think it was on Wednesday, regarding the location of his slider. He's been leaving him right over the heart of the plate, and his sinker, his two-seamer, even more so. And that's just such a big turn from where he was last season. It could just be a few minor adjustments, and he's back to being the successful guy that he was. I certainly have all the faith in the world and like Jeremy Hefner and the rest of the pitching staff figuring that out. But in the same respect, he doesn't have a very long leash if he can't get that figured out soon. The Mets are only playing with a three and a half game lead in the division. They're playing shorthanded. This might not be the time to wait out his development. Even if he's just going to be a long guy to squeeze in there on like a Lucchese or a bullpen type day, and maybe bring in an external arm or someone, a Thomas Tapucki, who struggled his last time out, but he has some promise as a higher level minors arm. Yeah, I'm okay with giving him another couple of starts to figure it out, but a short leash moving forward because you can't be giving up games.
Yeah, I agree. And I sent out a tweet during his start the other day that it may be time to send him to AAA. And I had mentioned that maybe giving Gesellman a crack in the rotation would be a decent idea. He's had a good year. I know the other night he got a little roughed up, but I mean, he's looked a lot more confident and a lot better this year. And I mean, he's proved in the past he could start. I mean, him and Lugo saved us in 2016 when they were able to start those games down the stretch. So I wouldn't be that opposed to giving him a chance. But I just think if, like we've touched on, if there weren't so many injuries, I think they'd be quicker to probably send him down and let him go develop more in the minor leagues. But I mean, they're kind of looking at it as we don't really have that many better options. And like you said, I mean, think about the starts he's had this year that have been really good. Like the start he had in Tampa a few weeks back or a month back, I guess that was one of his, that was his best start of the season probably. And he looked really good. He's had a couple good starts against the Phillies. I mean, he's got roughed up against the Phillies. It's been a roller coaster, but he's a young pitcher, but he's got all the talent in the world. He was a first round pick out of Oregon, I believe. And like you said, I don't think confidence is an issue. And Luis Rojas touched on it after a start the other night that, it's not so much a stuff problem. It's really the command and the location of his pitches. Like you said, he's leaving stuff right over the heart of the plate, and he's walking guys. I mean, last year I remember in tight spots, he wasn't afraid to go in and attack guys, and he was really locating well, whether that was J.D. Martinez facing him with the bases loaded last year in what might have been his first start of his career.
I think it was his debut. He debuted against the Red Sox, and so he
just,
that makes sense.
That's what I loved about him last year was his ability to just not be afraid and to attack guys, and I feel like when he's leaving some stuff over the plate and he's walking guys, which isn't as – it's not really what we expected out of him. So, I mean, like you said, I think it's just some minor adjustments, but they might have to pull the leash on him sooner rather than later because, like you said, we're hoping for big things this season. And we can't
– We can't just throw him out there if he's not doing well at all. You know, I agree. Sure. There's a line between, helping him figure it out, but, you're right. At some point, some move will have to be made, I think, within the next few weeks.
Well, I mean
– probably.
To be honest, everyone was saying the same thing about Joey Lucchese a couple of weeks ago, and he's shown, you know, incremental progress. If Peterson goes out and, I don't know, gives up two runs over six innings his next start and then two runs over six innings the start after, it kind of shines him in a whole new light. And, you know, such is the nature of being a ball player. You kind of build off these little things. And if he does go out and, you know, put up something that he can actually, you know, hang his hat on and then work off of. You almost have to keep giving him that opportunity. It's a very, I'm not envious of the decision makers here. It's a tough decision to make.
Right. Yeah. I think it's difficult because you're right. The Mets don't have tons of starting pitching depth. They don't have like blue chip like prospects at AAA that they can just pull up. I mean, you know, Thomas Cipolla, I have a feeling he'll probably get a start at some point, especially since over the next few weeks, the Mets have a lot of doubleheaders coming up against, I think, the Nationals and the Braves. So they're going to need like eight starters in 5 days and without any days off. So I'm fairly certain he'll probably get called up at some point unless they acquire a bunch of new arms for the rotation. But yeah, I totally think that, you know, I was a huge fan of Peterson last year. Really believed in him going into this season too. I think, you know, I don't want people just to say like, oh, he's just Steven Matz, because they're different people. Like he's not feeling, you know, and Matz has struggled this year with the Blue Jays too. And in a lot of his outings. And so I do think that mental toughness is there with Peterson. There needs to be kind of, even if he has the mental toughness, it just needs to translate into him actually getting more hitters out in those clutch situations. And you're right. I think like the control, we really didn't see him kind of like labor through a lot of innings last year. And I feel like this year he's just been laboring through a lot of like, you know, two guys on in like every inning. And so that's definitely something that hopefully he can just iron out at some point, whether it's, you know, in rotation or if he does end up getting sent down in AAA.
Yeah.
So Tim, I want to ask you about the Apple and what led you to start that and how's that going? And it seems like you're doing really well. So why don't you talk to everybody about kind of what started that?
Well, the Apple was kind of born out of necessity. I split off from Mesmerized in January. And my first instinct was, oh man, I got to keep writing every day. So I quick jumped on Substack. It literally took me 15 minutes. I said, oh boy, I gotta find a name. And you know, first I'm like, oh, well, an apple, the apple. And I'm like, well, there's Rising Apple. What if I'm just the apple? And I kind of stuck. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm like, let's go with that. And I try to showcase a new writer or two every month. But for the most part, it's my show and I get to do what I want. And you know, if I want to put out a 1500 word recap with a whole bunch of thoughts and quotes thrown in there, I could do that. If I wanted to, you know, I guess back in March, I think I wrote about my dad or something. Like it just gives me the freedom to say what I want. And, you know, it's not like other writing homes didn't give me that, but almost a sense of pride, just kind of doing it on your own and building a little following. We have the podcast, Simply Amazing. That's growing, you know, incrementally. It's been a really cool experience, but it just, you know, you guys are living it yourselves. It's this fan base is just creating content for them is a rewarding experience.
They just love expressing themselves so much in every form, all the time.
In every form. And you can't leave out the ones who want to tell you you're wrong or the ones who want to tell you you're right. And it's all appreciated. Every bit of feedback I get, it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, it's just such a passionate fan base. And I love creating content for them. And the love has been reciprocated at the Apple. It's been really cool.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I don't know if there's ever been kind of an official poll taken of like which fan base has the most kind of podcasts or whatever, but I feel like there are, you know, and I know like Cohen's Corner is one of those Mets podcasts, but I feel like there is a lot of different avenues for Mets content that people, you're right, this Mets fan base is so passionate. I remember Pete Alonso once said at the Mets Fan Fest a couple years ago that there's no like casual Mets fans. People just like, if they're a Mets fan, they're all in, which means that they really just have a lot of thoughts all the time and like love spewing it out to the world. And whether that's in writing or in podcasting, I think that proliferation of content really just extends from how passionate the fans are. And so it's great to see someone like you who is so such a passionate fan, but also such a fantastic writer and you have a very kind of rational, like level-headed view of the Mets as well, which I appreciate. I think a lot of times people like to jump off the deep end immediately whenever anything goes wrong or anything doesn't go to their liking. But I think this season, especially, we've seen the Mets kind of have several different sustained winning streaks. And so I think each loss, like, I think there's just more trust this year than maybe in years past that they're going to pick it up after that. And that each loss doesn't feel as much like a disaster or a season ender as it might have in the past. So I think your very optimistic kind of, you know, forward thinking approach to writing has done a really great job of communicating that.
Well, you know, it's funny when I first started writing at MMO, Mike Mayers, he's like, man, you're really optimistic for a Mets fan. I said, yeah, it's, you know, because, you know, we've seen, I think it was 1999, the Mets weren't, I think they fired their hitting coaches in June, right in the beginning of June or something like that. And, you know, just went on a tear. Like, you can never count this team out. And we've seen it go the other way, too. Look at 07. It's not over until it's over. That's not just a Yogi Berra thing. It's true. We've seen it happen so many times. Look at 2019. I think the Mets were only one game behind the Nationals for the best record in the second half. A couple of different breaks, and that might be the Mets going to the World Series and winning that year. You really never know, and I think that's the beauty of baseball. It's a long season. So much can happen. You know, look at what's happened in 2 months. I think I said it before. You can only imagine what's going to happen 2 months later. It's the beauty of the game, and I'll never count out anybody. You know, I could still say, oh, yeah, well, don't. Someone could tell me the Phillies will win the NL East this year, and I believe them because it's baseball and anything can happen. So, yeah, optimism is kind of my thing. I love it.
That's great. I mean, because you'll go I go crazy sometimes because I can get really worked up and be nervous. So I kind of envy you that you're able to stay optimistic because I just don't have a lot of patience. So I guess being a Mets fan, I shouldn't have done that, I guess.
That comes with years, man. Yeah. That comes with years and years of going through it. Trust me, I was the same way for a very long time. I can't tell you how many new remotes I had to go to Optimum and get from ones going through the wall.
Be their brand ambassador. They outfitted me after every time I threw my remote through the TV.
You know, you wear this fandom like a badge of honor because we've been through everything and then some. Like, oh, your team had a bad year? Well, we've had a bad decade. Like, we got you on anything you got here. And, you know, that's what's going to make winning that much more exciting and just memorable when it does happen for these fans who have been living and dying with this team for practically their entire lives. I'm 37. I don't remember 1986 more than, you know, my dad really happy. That's it. That's all I remember from 1986. Like this fan base is going to explode one day very soon. It's going to be amazing.
And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but what do you sense about the new ownership and the new regime that's kind of in place and kind of the new culture that they've brought in? Do you, and obviously we talked about the depth they've brought, but what do you think of Steve Cohen and the tweeting that he's done and how he reaches out to the fans and he's kind of accessible? I mean, I personally like that a lot compared to the Wilpons you would hear from maybe once a year. And we all know whatever, everybody has their problems with the Wilpons, but what do you think so far of Steve Cohen and the job that he's done as team owner?
you know, I don't think that you can't ask for anything more at this point. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, but he's doing his damnedest to get it done in maybe a week or so. I mean, he's doing a terrific job, just the overhaul in the front office and the research and development departments, the actual commitment to winning. You know, for you guys are old enough to remember the Yankees winning every single year because they've been doing it for 30 years. But, you know, the annual commitment to championships that they've been doing across town for so long, you know, in Queens, that almost felt like a dream. Like, oh, that's never going to happen for us. And, you know, over the next few years, that's probably going to happen here. And it's it almost doesn't feel real yet. But and especially now that you're seeing still, you know, I hate to call them a B roster because they're playing so well right now. But, you know, this isn't what anybody had in mind for this first season of the Cohen regime. But, boy, they're making it a magical one nonetheless. And I think that's only going to kind of add fuel to the fire as far as bringing this team up to snuff to actually, you know, contend for championships every season. And I think this is the right ownership group to kind of take that long, long awaited step.
Right. I mean, I feel like for so long, if the Mets ever, you know, even when the Mets made it to the World Series in 2015, it's like it almost every time they had a good season, you know, in my lifetime or the recent past, it always felt like either a fluke or just like an accident. Like, oh, you know, that's, you know, like they weren't really trying to actually like build a sustainable winner. And they're always just felt like just a slight kind of dark cloud over everything. And I feel like there seems to be just so much more lightness around the Mets now. And even when things go wrong, you know, the owner's still being upbeat. The players seem really upbeat. There seems like a wonderful kind of energy that they're all, and it's interesting. What I find interesting too, is I feel like there's been a lot of the newer Mets that they acquired this year, like Taiwan Walker, Stroman, who's still, you know, pretty new, didn't pitch last year, Trevor May, all these guys who are really like active on Twitter. One of the things I love is that they all kind of show a lot of very, really like outward support of each other. Like after every game, they're all like retweeting everything. You see Tomas Nito kind of become just like a huge fan favorite this year, especially with like the fantastic tweeting that he's done. And also obviously work on the field because he's been fantastic. But I just feel like there's very palpable like energy that they're all bringing to, you know, their work on the field, but also just kind of picking each other up off the field as well. And, yeah, you know, Twitter wasn't around in like 2007 and 8. So I'm not really sure what that would have been like for those teams, but I just feel like there's a very kind of tangible positive energy that I think stems from the ownership down. I mean, something else we never really saw in the last few years until this year was players like explicitly citing the ownership as a reason they wanted to come to the Mets. And that's kind of how this like off season started. Trevor May said that in his first press conference, he was the first guy they signed. And I feel like just that kind of attitude of, oh my gosh, people actually want to come here. They weren't just like duped into thinking that the Mets were a good idea. And so I just feel like that they'd started off with, I think, that positive energy, and that's just kind of translated forward until now, where the players are really, they're all kind of buying into this winning formula, and they really just believe in creating something special because they believe that, you know, just, I feel like just everything seems a lot more kind of really driven towards winning. And you're right, it doesn't feel like if they have a good season this year, it won't have been by accident or a fluke or like in spite of anything. It's actually like because they wanted to do it. Yeah. So that's kind of just the difference that I felt, you know, between this Mets team who has been really good so far for the most part, and, you know, past good Mets teams who, you know, you just never got, it never felt like that. I mean, they had really good teams in 06 through 08, but I never really felt like, you know, it always felt like a little bit in spite of something, and it doesn't feel that way anymore.
Well, it's funny. I mean, they really did make a commitment to try and win in those 06 through 08 years. I mean, 05, they went out and got Pedro and Carlos Beltran. You bring in Santana, you go and get Carlos Delgado. I mean, they really made a push. And, you know, game 7 against the Cardinals in 06, the collapse in 07. That was, at least, you know, presumably from the outside looking in, looking at the Wilpons, like, all right, we're not going to try that anymore. Then you add the Madoff thing into that, and they definitely can't go out and spend anymore. And, you know, the one thing I never understood about the Wilpons is that they know that if you put a competitive team out there, fans are going to come. Fans are going to come to the games. They're going to watch the games. You're going to spend money at the games. It's, you know, that's how this works. And I think Cohen gets that. I think he understands that you have to put a winning product out there. You can't say, oh, well, we got these guys, but we're going to hope for the best from these guys and hope we get there. And that's kind of what 2015 was about. I mean, that was just an overachieving team. Terry Collins, who he gets mixed reviews as manager, but he got the most out of that team. And that's 2015, 2017, 2016. He got them there and the players got themselves there, and they just, it was an overachieving team, and the Wilpons didn't, like you said, it was almost a fluke. I think that's going to be a thing of the past under Cohen, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. And it's just nice to know that we can go into an off season, like a couple years ago when there was that huge off season with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, the big free agent class. And I mean, not that whether you were a Mets fan, you wanted those guys, that's a whole different story. But just the fact now that we have a shot, like back then we're like, we
peaced didn't out, want to entertain basically. Yeah.
Like you couldn't even entertain the idea because you knew there was no shot in hell that the Wilpons were going to pony up the money to sign a guy like that. But with a guy like Steve Cohen, I mean, you know that he'll go after him if he's the right fit, but he has enough money to do it. And in the past that definitely wasn't.
And he's already done it. I mean, he signed Lindor to the huge deal. I mean, the money has been put out. So I think, you know, that just kind of showed to everyone that, yep, like it wasn't all talk. We will give guys who we think are worth it a big contract. And you're right. Like, yeah, I know. I remember when all the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado sweepstakes, it was exhausting because it lasted to like February. But I just remember it was between, I guess it was like the Yankees, the Padres, and I forget, it was like the White Sox. I just remember all the press about them like going to the stadium and like all this stuff. And I was like, all right, like we're sitting here hoping we sign like Hector Santiago. That might be nice. You know, the classic, wasn't there that classic Brody Van Wagenen statement about like, we are committed to improving this team, which we've begun with the purchase of Hector Santiago's contract. And so, like, hopefully Hector Santiago doesn't have to be the banner that's hanging from Citi Field in the near future. I think that has been put to bed, hopefully. But
or even think about like when Sandy Alderson was here the first time and he made some joke that who needs Giancarlo Stanton when you have Brandon Nimmo? He said something like that. And obviously Nimmo's turned into a very good player, but he made that joke and it was a joke, but at the same time it was like, all right, let's get real. Like we're not going after Stanton. We're sticking with Brandon Nimmo. You know what I mean? So like, and thank God the Mets weren't around and Cohen wasn't around for the Giancarlo sweepstakes. Cause we all know how that's turned out so far, but it's just the point, you know what I mean? That we're in it. Well, I can't wait for that day where a big name player in the Mets beat out the Yankees and sign him, and hopefully the deal works out. But you know what I mean? That we don't just have to watch across town as they sign big free agent after big free agent. Like, we're sitting at the big boy table now too. So, I mean, other teams need to be aware of that and be afraid of us when it comes to the free agent and trade market. I mean, year in and year out.
And I think that's what was so cool about Cohen's, we're not going to spend like drunken sailors comment. Like, oh, you know, I take that as we're going to spend, but you know, we're not just going to throw money around. We're not going to be the Yankees of the 2000s and go pay Jason Giambi a bunch of money or, you know, anything like that. And even going back to Beltran, I mean, the Yankees, that was their guy. They wanted Beltran bad, and he picked the Mets. Like, I think that had a lot to do with Omar Minaya, but, you know, that was an outlier. That never happened, and it hasn't happened since. And I think you're right. I think it's going to be a lot of that. I think we're going to see it every year. I hope it doesn't get – I hope it doesn't turn Mets fans into Yankees fans in that regard. Like, oh, we missed out.
Entitled on, to everyone.
Yeah, we missed out on free agent A, and oh, now it's a failure winter.
Well, I think Mets fans felt that this offseason. They felt like they were entitled to everyone. I mean, you saw people like, I can't believe we didn't get Trevor Bauer, JT Realmuto, and George Springer. I'm like, okay, two of those guys are – I think Realmuto is back, but one of those guys like has barely taken the field this year. Everyone complaining that the Mets didn't sign George Springer. Like, where are you now? Because he's barely played. I mean, so his Nimmo's been out for the last month, to be fair, but look at Kevin Pillar. He's balling out like every day out there in center field. So yeah, I think Mets fans just have too many years of kind of being the little brother to like really embody that soon. But I mean, I think we did see a little bit of that like entitlement this offseason. For anyone who was, quote, disappointed by anything that they did, I'm sure a lot of those people are kind of sitting back right now and not really voicing those opinions, but
Well, look at when they were going to sign Bauer and how many people were freaking out that the world was ending because we didn't sign Trevor Bauer, even though at the time we obviously had the best pitcher in the world with DeGrom and our staff. We were thinking we were going to have Carrasco, and Syndergaard was supposed to be back at a decent time, and people were freaking out that we weren't going to get Bauer. But look what you were able to do with that money that you didn't use for Bauer. I mean, signing all the other depth
like
guys.
Like VR, Pilar, and Taiwan Walker are like combined making less.
Taiwan Walker's been just as much of the pitcher to this point that Trevor Bauer has been. And for way less. Like that has been such an underlooked deal. I mean, that it was a blessing that the Mets, I mean, there was all that controversy with Bauer right after he got signed, all that anyway. I mean, honestly, it was a blessing that he went to LA. Whatever you think about the guy, like seriously, like no hard feelings towards him, whatever. It was a blessing that he didn't sign with us, that we were able to use that money elsewhere. And I mean, it's really helped to keep us afloat to this point, because if all that money had gone to just Bauer, our team would be in way worse shape right now.
Yeah. They wouldn't have been able to do half the things they did. And, well, they would have, but they would have been constrained by doing it. And it would have been all for naught, because you're spending $30 million a year on someone who has a much higher ERA than Taiwan Walker.
So, Tim, something else that Jake and I talked a little bit about earlier today was just kind of witnessing, on a slightly less positive note. I know Mets fans obviously had a great day against the Orioles the other day, scoring 14 runs. But we have kind of firsthand witnessed two really bad starts from obvious, you know, current fan favorite, Matt Harvey, who a lot of Mets fans still feel very like emotionally attached to. And so it's been kind of sad, I think, to just see in a lot of his like post-game interviews after these games, when he's given up like 7 runs against the Mets, he does seem very humbled by like everything that's happened. And so, you know, obviously I don't want to focus too much on him because he's not on the Mets anymore, but you know, like it or not, people are still talking about him in the Mets world. SNY is still posting like his post-game interviews when he faces the Mets. What do you kind of make of, I guess, this current version of Harvey that the Mets have seen and like mostly kind of teed off on in the 2 starts that they've had against him?
Well, it's funny. I was watching the game last night, Wednesday night, and in the first inning, you know, he's throwing 95 and it's tailing across the plate. And I said, oh, well, that looks okay. And then he drops his famous changeup in, and I'm like, well, that looks all right too. And then, you know, by the next inning, he's just getting lit up. I don't think he's a starting pitcher anymore. I think that he still has some gas left in the tank as a reliever. But I did see his quotes from after the game yesterday, and it was kind of heartbreaking that he is, I guess you put it perfectly, he's humbled by this. You really can't undervalue or underappreciate the journey it took for him to get back to this point. But, you know, this is the humanity side of the games. At some point, it just, the magic runs out. I do want to say I still think he has pitching, major league pitching left in him. But, it, being a big fan of Matt Harvey from the time he was drafted, this point of his career is a little tough to see.
Yeah, it is really tough to see, especially like when he posted that picture on Instagram and Jerry's Familia is commenting on it, like, love you. You got
that was the one. And, oh, that yeah, was the one.
Yeah, and it's just like you think back to that 2015 team and just the magical years that Harvey did have with the Mets, especially like even when he first came up and made his major league debut in Arizona and how good he was and just how the way that we look forward to DeGrom starts, that's how it used to be with Harvey. I mean, and people wearing the Batman Dark Knight mask to the stadium, like it was like a holiday every fifth day. And I mean, people kind of, I feel like they forget that feeling. And I mean, even myself, I had some resentment towards him up until this season when we faced him and kind of saw how humble he was just because of the way he went out. And he was, let's be honest, he was kind of a tool, like the way he acted and like he was above everything else. And then, I mean, when his talent kind of fell off, I mean, it didn't work out the same way. So, I mean, yeah, it is heartbreaking to see the road that he's gone down. But even last night I was watching him and thinking that if he's able to throw 95, 96 right now as a starter, who knows, maybe he could be an effective reliever and a good closer, somebody that could really max out over one inning and showcase that stuff that he used to be able to show for 6-7 innings when he was in his prime. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's the road he needs to go down.
I just hope that he kind of gets the opportunity to. You know, Baltimore, and I hate to, you know, kind of take a knock at the Baltimore Orioles.
They're in last place.
They are. It's the kind of the bottom of the barrel right now. And this might be Matt Harvey's last chance. And that's, you know, that's what's a little sad about it. But yeah, hopefully he gets another shot, and hopefully he can just pick it up in Baltimore, because that's a, you know, they're in last place, but it's a fun team. They beat the Mets on Tuesday, and you know, you kind of saw the best of that team. And when they're playing well, it's a fun team to
watch.
They
got a lot of fun position players. You know, Cedric Mullins is like really an outstanding outfielder. I think he's
one of the most underrated players in baseball. I put that tweet out. He's fun to watch, and he can hit. He can go get it in center field. I mean, that catch he made in the first inning last night, that was an incredible play. Like, he's a fun player to watch.
Yeah. He didn't perform well last season. Former top round pick. And he hit the ground running this season. I think he came into the Mets series like 10 for 11 or something.
Yeah, he had like eight. Yeah, I think he had eight hits in eight consecutive at bats, which I think was reading this somewhere. I think the Orioles record for like consecutive hits was 9. So he like almost tied their franchise record. And, you know, the Orioles have been around for like 150 years. So that's a pretty big deal. But yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. And I actually was able to go to an Orioles game last week. It wasn't the one against the Mets. It was against the Twins. But I got to, see them in person, which they actually lost that game. They were still in the middle of their 14-game losing streak. But the game I went to was the last game of that streak. So I didn't help break it, but it broke the next day. So that was nice. But yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I think since 2015, which was Harvey's last great year with the Mets, was also the last time they were in the World Series. And like, I honestly think if they had actually like won something since then, people wouldn't be so attached to him, because they would have had just kind of more to like move on to in that way. But just because like his last great year with the Mets was also the last time that the closest they've been, those stars kind of aligned at the same time. You know, it's not like he had amazing years and they were just terrible, and then he left. You know, it's like the fact that his peak also aligned with the Mets kind of recent peak as well, and then they've kind of both fallen since then, is just another reason why I think Mets fans are so, you know, emotionally attached to him still. And it's like, there's been other players that have left the team that, you know, that start like were drafted by the team and have since left, that I think people don't feel the same way about. But you're right. I mean, I think what's nice though is that I think Mets fans are, you know, really, really pulling for him. And I think he knows that. He got that reception when he was at Citi Field. So, you know, obviously he's not on the Mets right now, but just knowing that like people still believe in him, I think, even if it's a lot of Mets fans, and again, not the team he's currently on, but hopefully that just gives him a little extra. And if he needs any extra motivation, hopefully that they can help provide that.
And Tim, before we let you go, so this is what I'm always wondering from the guests that we have on, especially the ones that are as invested into the Mets as you are, like we are. So what's your prediction for the season? Where do you see it going? You think we're going to get healthy? And how surprised would you be if we aren't in the postseason?
My pinned tweet at the Apple is World Series bound. That's from like 10 minutes before first pitch, and I'm sticking to it.
Good.
I hope you're right, sir. I hope you're right. I'm there with you. I know you're optimistic. I'm like optimistic, so I want to be there with you. So I need to like see it happen. But that would be amazing. I mean, I think we've also seen, like, who knows how this division is going to shape up. It's like, so the Mets certainly have a chance in the NL East as it stands. And I also think like they're really going to have to win the division to get to the postseason this year, since it's not expanded playoffs. I have to think the wild cards could potentially both come out of the NL West, especially like one of the Dodgers, Padres, Giants, at least two of those teams are going to make the playoffs. So the Mets realistically, I really think are going to have to win the division to make it into the playoffs. And they really do have a good chance at that. Like, I genuinely feel confident that they can do it. Whether or not they will is another matter, but I haven't really felt confident in that respect in like a very long time. So I sincerely hope you're right. Hopefully your optimism can help power them through the end of the season. But yeah, Tim, we were so happy you were able to come on with us at such short notice. So thank you so much for that. I guess before we let you go, is where can listeners find you, whether it's your own personal Twitter or just, you know, the different platforms and things that you write for? So share as much of that as you'd like with our listeners so they can go listen, go read, go see everything that you're doing Mets related.
Well, so no one has to go and grab like a pen and at least a 3x5 index card, because there's so many to list. You can just check me out on Twitter. It's Timothy R. Ryder. That's R-Y-D-E-R. You'll see all of my links and the different outlets that I create content for there. And again, that's the Apple. Simply Amazing is the podcast. Yeah, you could find those two places and everything will be there. But yeah, follow along with the Apple. It's theapplenym.substack.com. But again, you can just go right to my Twitter and click on the link. I share all my articles there. And yeah, any support's appreciated.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on. It was so much fun.
Jake, Elizabeth, I can't thank you guys enough. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So you guys know where to find us. You can find Elizabeth on Twitter at NYMFan97. You can find myself at Giblin_Jake. And you can follow us at Cohen's Corner Pod. So we'll talk to you guys next time.